right, welcome to the Free Stretch Week 8 edition here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. Unfortunately, coming to you on a week where this Buccaneer football team does not have a winning record, does not even have a 500 record, but has a losing record. A lot has happened since back in August. It seems like such a long time ago. It was before any of the regular season games had been played. It was two kickers ago, almost three kickers ago. It was one hurricane ago. And if I could go all the way back to then and tell you that as we got ready for the opening division game of the 2017 season against the Carolina Panthers, that the Bucs would be 2-4, that the first thing I would have said was, wait a minute, they should have played seven games by then, because we didn't know about the hurricane yet. But whatever, the other six games, 2-4, if I had told you that, you would have been very, very disappointed, if not downright incredulous. No, Bobby, you can't be telling me the truth, Bobby from the future. I would have been incredulous to be telling you this, and yet here we are. So we got a lot to get to on this podcast today, and as always, I want to thank Joe Bucks Fan for hosting it. Those guys have always been great to me, and it's been so fun so far, despite the Bucks record. I've had so much fun doing this so far and getting feedback from you guys and getting a chance to be exposed to a wider audience. I owe all that to Joe Bucks Fan. I'm very appreciative of it. And if you want to email me or tweet at me or whatever it is, always easy to do, okay? So I love getting in touch with you guys. I love hearing from you guys. The emails, the tweets, all that stuff. Email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Very simple, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's all spelled normally. And my Twitter is @bobbygameday. But like I said, lots to get to, so let's get started. First of all, I don't know if it was the first podcast or the second one or one of the earlier ones. We talked about the fine line in the NFL and how at this point anymore, nobody is really that much better than anybody else. And I'm not saying all these teams are the same because they're not. There are certainly better ones. There are certainly bad ones. Of course, but when you take the vast, vast middle class in the NFL, and even in the top-tier teams, it's not that much of a difference. There just isn't. It's professional football. You've got the top 1% of the top 1%. You know, if you rate players and rate teams on a 100 scale, and you keep winnowing out the worst ones until you get to the very top performers, and that's what the NFL is, all even the Browns, all the teams, you know, you're talking about somebody who's 99.9 on a scale of 100 being the best and maybe somebody who's 98.9 being one of the lower. I mean, it's not like there's anybody in their 60s or 70s or 80. You know, these are at the top. So my point of all this is that we talked about in the first couple podcasts, you know, all these teams, all these games, they come down to almost nothing. These seasons come down to almost nothing. And when you have a 10-6 team and a 6-10 team, oh yeah, they're awesome. No, they suck. No, they're really the same team. That's a four-game, that's actually a two-game difference, because if you win two more games, it'd be either way. You know, and you get 10-6 and 6-10, and the difference is just the randomness. Who makes plays late in a game? A goal line stand here and there where you make a team kick a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown, or where you kick a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown, a turnover, a penalty, what have you. That's the difference. And games like this past Sunday in Buffalo are exactly what I'm talking about. Buffalo and the Bucs, I mean, that's the same thing. It's not like Buffalo's better because they won. Bucs wouldn't have been better if they had won. Totally random. Comes down to just a hairline on any number of dozens of plays. And so you get a Bucs team, to their credit, and it gets forgotten now, but to their credit, who goes down and gets the big score when they need it. Looks like they're going to win the game. Jameis Winston, great job. The receivers, great. I mean, the offense did their job, went and got the score. And then, okay, the defense gives it up. We're used to that by now. This is not a good defense. And, I mean, we've been over and over. There's nothing to break down anymore. You can't rely on the defense. They have their moments like every team does, but you can't rely on the defense. And when the Bucs scored and we thought we were going to win. Hey, great, good for us. Did we really think we were going to win? How many of you out there thought, hey, all right, we got this now? I mean, I don't think very many. So Buffalo came down and tied it. And Bucks could have settled for a field goal and we would have been happy. Hey, they got the go-ahead field goal. They got a touchdown instead. Still gave it back. But okay, you know what? One of the upsides of having a bad defense is that they allow points to happen so quickly that your offense gets it back. So, all right, here we go. Hum, baby, here we go. No problem. We're going to go down and get the game-winning field goal again. Patrick Murray, he's been here for 20 minutes, but he's a god. He's nails. He can make anything. So, Adam Humphries fumbles on the second play or whatever it was. Was it the first or second play? I don't even remember anymore. And we give it right back to Buffalo in field goal range. Field goal good. Hauschka's not going to miss. Bing, bang, boom. We're done. Bucks lose again. It's just like that. I mean, that's the NFL. That's a 10-6 team before your eyes going to an 8-8 team before your eyes going to a 7-9 or 6-10 team. It's that fine of a line. You can witness it happening in real time in the final 5 minutes of these games every week. So, always talk every week, what's our buzzword? Don't be reactionary, don't let any 1 week define the season, don't get too high when it's good, don't get too low when it's bad. I mean, we hammer this point on this Free Stretch podcast all the time, because it's true. Even in football, with very few games and a small sample size, even then it's true. But, you and I both see it, we've watched the games. This is not a team that looks like teams we, you know, when you watch sports long enough, when you watch your own team long enough, you remember the good years and the bad years, and you kind of, it feels different, doesn't it? Like, even early in the year, it feels different. You kind of feel like when you're watching a team that has a chance to do something, even when they maybe don't win the games, like I remember 99, I think it was 1999, yeah, it was the NFC Championship year. Weren't they 3-4 in 1999? I believe. And then they just reeled off. They lost one more game. They won 11-5, ended up losing to the Rams in the NFC Championship. But even then, that defense was so good. The offense was bad. I mean, we all remember it if we've been a Bucs fan for a while. The offense was terrible, but that defense was so good. Even at 3-4, you didn't feel like the season was over. And I'm not saying the season's over now, but I watched the Buccaneers, and the offense is good. I mean, we can nitpick here and there. But do you feel like you're watching a team that's going to play in January? I mean, I really don't. And before the season, I thought that was a virtual lock. I mean, not a lock, but I thought this was the year where, hey, it's finally going to swing back in the Bucs' direction. And little things, it's offense, it's defense. You know, even Dirk Cutter, at the end of the game, you know, Bucs did get the ball back after Buffalo hit the eventual game winner. There wasn't a lot of time left. But they were able to make a cut. They hit a pass. They got to near midfield. It was like 30, 35-yard line. And see, little things like this just piss me off. I mean, they were going to lose no matter what, probably. I understand that. It's a stupid thing to nitpick. But they had time on the clock. And they had the Buffalo secondary playing literally 30 yards off of the receivers. What's your highest percentage play there? They had about time for two plays. They had like 8-9 seconds, whatever it was. And again, I'm going through this because I think it's indicative, even though it didn't make the difference in the game. You know, Jameis Winston could throw up maybe 70, 65, whatever yards. They were right on the borderline. Pull a quick 10-yard out or a hitch or whatever. I mean, the Buffalo secondary did not care. You could have just literally run out there, turned around, caught the ball, got out of bounds. They're letting you do that. Do that, throw a Hail Mary. They work sometimes. It's a low percentage play, but get closer to midfield. Have Jameis throw it up there. You got Mike Evans. You got tall guys. What the hell? You know, maybe we get lucky on one. It happens. Bucks hit one a few years ago against the Bears. I think it was before the half, not the end of the game, or it might have been the end of the game. It didn't affect the outcome of the game. But they happen a lot. I mean, we can look at Hail Marys that have happened over the past few years, college and pro. They're fairly frequent. How often does that lateral play work? Have you ever seen that lateral play work? I remember one time. One time, not counting the Cal band play, the Stanford band play, but I think it was the Jaguars and the Saints. It was like, was it 10 years ago or something like that? And the Saints hit this improbable lateral play, and it was, you know, where they pitched it 75 times, and actually it worked, and they scored. Then they missed the extra point that would have tied it, and they still lost. But anyway, that's the only one of those I can remember. And again, I know this doesn't matter. This isn't the reason, but the point, somebody tweeted at me this week. I think it was Matt tweeted at me. It didn't matter, Bobby. Don't worry about it. I know it didn't matter. But I want a head coach who's thinking. Throw it 10 yards, get out of bounds, throw a Hail Mary. There's a 1 in probably 15 chance you make that catch on a Hail Mary. It could happen. You have no chance. And the Bucs actually went longer than most teams. The Bucs pitched the ball. I didn't count them, but it was at least 10 times. It might have been more than, maybe closer to 15. And still, you're not going to score on that play. Come on. See, it's indicative thinking. So anyway, doing this podcast on Thursdays, we're always 4 days removed from the last game. I hate to belabor it too much. I like to look ahead, but I always have to clear my throat, say my piece about what happened. And that is my piece about the Bucs game on Sunday against the Bills. Now, looking ahead, we've got a Bucs team who can't rush the passer. I wanted to bring this up today because I was excited, even though I know it's not happening. But, by the way, did I forget to say Noah Spence is on the IR now? So, not that, we were counting on that anyway, but now he is officially on the IR. He can come back with like 2 weeks left. If they, by then, God knows, the Bucs will probably be, 6-8 or something. But the Bucs have no pass rush. Zero pass rush whatsoever, which is the crux of everything on defense is the pass rush. So there are some fundamental issues you could say. Simeon Rice, 43 years old, been out of football for, almost 10 years. Posting pictures of himself working out. Anytime somebody's putting stuff on Twitter, posting videos of themselves working out, I always buy it hook, line, and sinker every time. Pat Murray, who's now on the Bucs, a few weeks ago when Folk was missing all those kicks, he wouldn't say a word. He just put up a little 10-second clip of him at some high school field somewhere kicking some 55-yard field goal. That's all he'd put up. And I was just totally buying it. I was like, yeah, look at this, dude. This guy is kicking 55 yards. Workout, if you want a sucker for workout stuff, Bobby Fenton, me, I'm your guy. I love that stuff. And oh, look at Sim doing split squats at a local gym. He looks good, doesn't he? He could play. I totally buy it. So Sim posted, he posted the words. He said, I want to come back and take this team to the playoffs with a pass rush. Then he posted a video of him doing some jump squats and stuff like that. You couldn't even see how much was on the bar. It doesn't matter how much was on the bar. The point is, last guy to get double-digit sacks is now 43, and he's still probably our best chance to get double-digit sacks. I mean that sarcastically. He has no chance to get double-digit sacks. But the point is, you're in a bad way when you've got 43-year-old ex-players clamoring to come back and help you with your pass rush, and you're in an even worse way when your fans see that stuff and actually get excited about it, which I did. Because the first reaction ought to be, oh, get this guy out of here. We got studs. We don't need this guy. Instead, I'm like, oh, yeah. He looks good. That jump squat looks good. I think he's been doing his Olympic lifts, at least. He's been doing some snatches. He's moving some heavy numbers. I think he could still do this. Bad sign. Bad idea. But tell me you don't want to see it. At this point, who cares? What do we have to lose? Not that it's not going to happen, but I just thought that was something that excited me. And let me tell you something else. I'm 37 now. I'm starting to get to the age, and this happened last night, too, watching the World Series with Rich Hill pitching, who I think is like the 10th guy 37 or older to make his first World Series start in the past 20 years or something like that. When I was in my 20s, even in my early 30s, I didn't really care about the age of the players. I didn't pay much attention to it. If there was an older guy, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, older guy. And for those of you that are younger than 37 that are listening to this, you'll see those of you that are older or my age will understand exactly what I'm saying. Now that I've gotten older, I am deeply in tune with the age of the older guys, and I instinctively root for all of them. Even 5 years ago, Rich Hill, he's 37 years old, making a World Series start, I would have been like, whatever, I don't care about this, this guy's going to get lit up. Last night, I was like, hell yes, Rich Hill, he's going to get out there, he's going to throw some voodoo at these guys, he's going to flame some people. I was all about Rich Hill last night, because you always like to think, hey, I'm not that old, I can still play. I'm not, professional talent, but when you get to be mid-30s, late-30s, you start thinking about how, this really isn't that much different than my 20s. I don't feel that much different. I say that all the time. And so you see a guy, whether it's Rich Hill or now Sim, who's older, he's 43,
And you're like, hell yeah, he can. Don't tell him he can't do it. He can do it. I feel good. He probably feels good. He's a pro athlete. I feel great, by the way. I'm even playing football for the Dunedin Pirates. DunedinPirates.com. Semi-pro football. Real football. Check it out if you want to join me. And until the inevitable knee injury that comes with that happens, I feel fantastic. And seeing Sim posting videos like that, saying he wants to come back, I'm Team Sim now, baby. Because the older guy, again, you notice that stuff when you get older. And 37's not old by any means. I'm just talking about sports old. But, you know, you go through your sports fan life cycle as a kid. You look up to these guys. They seem like gods. I remember as a kid being a ball boy because my dad and my uncle were high school coaches, and I was always the ball boy over at Robinson High School, then at Armwood High School. And the guys on those teams, high school kids, I mean, they seemed like titans. They were larger than life. I couldn't wait to be like those guys. Now I look at high school players, and they're puppies. I look at them, they look like those little two-year-old thoroughbreds who are kind of like awkward in their frame. You can tell they're going to grow into it, but they're still kind of gangly. You know, and then you get older to be college age. The pro players still seem older. It was kind of weird in college because I was always watching college football. I loved it my whole life. When I finally got to be the same age of the players, and I was not good enough to play college football, but it was kind of like, well, these guys are just the same dopes I see in my class. You know, you go from looking up at these guys to being their peer age-wise, and it's weird. Same with pros when I got in my 20s. It was kind of weird at first, like, these guys are the same age as me. And it takes a little bit of the innocence away from it because you don't idolize them like you did when you were a kid. Then you get in your 30s, you start getting older than most of the players. Then you see birthdays of some of the players like in 1997, you're like, whoa. Like you were in high school when that, again, if you're my age. And then you get to your late 30s and then you're just happy to see anybody your age still playing. Like Rich Hill last night for the Dodgers, who pitched well. They lost, but it wasn't because of him. Great game, by the way. The World Series is a lot of fun. I love October. But like Rich Hill, you know, like Rondy was before he eventually retired, like Yager's doing for the Panthers. I mean, Yager's 10 years older than me almost, and he's still playing hockey. And like Sim, bring him in. Hey, give him a workout. Least you could do is give him a workout, right? Doesn't cost you anything. Let him come into $1 and do some swim moves around some pads. Let him do that. Put it on the evening news. Let us watch that. That's all. If Bucks can do that for me, I'll be happy. I'll tell you a quick story real quick. My favorite Sim memory. Because when I was working in radio in the mid-2000s, when I was first getting my start, covering the Bucks like any local radio station. So I'd be at the open locker room sessions on Wednesdays. I'd be at the games on Sunday in the locker room after the game. Bucks were playing San Francisco one weekend, and I don't remember what exact year, but it was sometime in the mid-2000s. It was when Gruden was still here, but post-Super Bowl. And Simeon Rice had been on their bad side for a while. He'd been doing something, flaking out. So he got sent home on Saturday on a commercial flight before the game on Sunday. Whatever it was, Gruden just said, you know what, just go home to Tampa. You're not playing tomorrow, and you don't need to be here. So, of course, open locker room that Wednesday, the entire local media just beelines to Sim. And Sim can't wait. He wants to talk. So, he pulls out this copy of something called Black Man Magazine. I'm not making this up. It's probably still a magazine. Black Man Magazine. And he holds up the magazine. And it's just some... It was a black woman swimsuit model on the cover. You know, gigantic chest. Her rear end looked like almost like a balloon, just like a caricature, you know, string thong bikini. And Sim holds this up. He's like, yeah, man, it's no sweat, you know. I had a long flight home. I was on my own. I just read my Black Man magazine. He's holding the magazine up. Everybody in the media is taking pictures. He had a big grin. You know, Sim, easy come, easy go. He always just, you know, that the beat of his own drummer type guy. And... I don't remember exactly how long it was after that he wasn't on the team anymore. I have to look it up, but it wasn't that long. But he's still the last one to really and truly be a pass rusher for this team. Until Noah Spence, I'm not comparing Noah Spence to Simeon Rice yet, but I'm saying until Spence got here last year and showed flashes of it, now he's out. And he'd been playing with a hurt shoulder even before he was officially out. And we still don't have a pass rush. And that brings me to Gerald McCoy.
because he's an inside guy, I know, but the point is that every season, once or twice a season, the narrative flares up. It flared up again this week. I'm tired of hearing about McCoy. He's so overrated. This and that. And then the McCoy defenders come in. How can you say that? This guy has been a mainstay for the Bucks. All he does is what they ask him to do. You know, all pro, blah, blah, blah. And he's underappreciated. It's ridiculous how much people take a dump on Gerald McCoy. And there's the two sides come out. I don't know what triggers it. Every year, though, it happens. Every year. A couple times a year, usually. So this week now, here we go again. It's been on Twitter. It's been, GMC, he's not getting it done. Oh, come on, that's ridiculous. You're an idiot if you don't think he's one of the most valuable players this team has had in the past decade. And you know what? Honestly, both things are true. Like, the truth usually lies somewhere in the middle when two sides are just clamoring at each other. Rah, rah, rah. And that's the case here. Gerald McCoy is a very good player. And he's been a very good player for the Bucks. And the people that defend him are right to defend him. He's not nasty in the sense of a guy like Warren Sapp. And the thing about it is, I mean, that's the thing. We had Sapp. And now everything's always about Sapp, even years later. And he's not Sapp. But it's not because he's not a good player. He does have a different personality. And for everything, almost everything in life, that personality is a lot better than Sapp's, who's notorious for not being such a nice guy. But people don't care about that. People want to see nastiness. People want to see sacks. People want to see run stuff. And people want to see him jaw it. People want to see what they saw with Sapp. People want to see him make a play in the backfield, get up, jaw at the guy as he's going back. He wants to see him yelling across the line of scrimmage at their huddle while they're trying to call play. People like that. And I'm fine with that. But I'm also fine with the GMC defenders because they rightfully point to his actual production, which has been better than he gets credit for. Now, with all that said, here's the biggest flaw with Gerald McCoy, and it's not Gerald McCoy's personal flaw, it's the entire franchise. You know, Sapp played for this team, and all those guys, Simeon Rice and John Lynch and Barber and, you know, everybody, during its most treasured golden years. I mean, the period from 1997 through after the Super Bowl, I've never been happier as a Bucks fan. And there was a lot of disappointment in those years. They'd come close and get beat, and, you know, it took them that one time to finally get over the hump. But those are some of my most treasured. I mean, I can name you so many memories, so many games through all the regular seasons, the playoffs, both good and bad. I have so many memories. I really do. And if you've been a Bucks fan for an amount of time that goes past when those games were happening, then you treasure them too. I know it. Do you have a single memory of the Bucks? I mean, think about this for a second. This is how bad it's been. Do you have a single memory of the Bucks from the past 10 years, like an actual memory? Does anything at all stand out? I mean, as a fan of this team, just because I watch every game, I could scrape together a couple, maybe. And I'm a fanatic. I mean, I watch every game. You know, if you ask some random football fan, I mean somebody who actually follows the league, not somebody casual, even they'd be like, yeah, the Bucks, they've kind of been out there for, you know, the past few. They'd probably say, like, oh, when Schiano used to storm the line of scrimmage on kneel down. That's probably the most memorable thing that's happened to this entire franchise since the last time they were in the playoffs in 2007. I remember Josh Freeman's coming out party against the Packers in a throwback game when they were wearing orange. I remember that. That was 2010. Coming up, or actually that was 2009 when he made that coming out party type thing. 2010, the next year, they went 10-6, missed the playoffs. That was semi-memorable. And then there were some years in there. It's like Kingpin. Remember Kingpin? When Roy, they're asking him about like what he's been doing. He's like, well, this is the 80s. You know, you just can't remember it. I can't remember anything. Like, I can't remember a single damn thing from the past 10 years of being a Bucks fan. I mean, drafting Jameis Winston, I remember blowing the Saints game the year before we got Winston in the second half when we would have ended up with Mariota if we'd won that game and the Bucks were leading by like 10 points in the fourth quarter and had in just nobody. I mean, they didn't tank. The players on the field didn't tank, but the Bucks put their worst players on the field. And it worked. They lost. They got Jameis Winston. I remember that. You know, Winston's done some stuff. This is the thing with Gerald McCoy and why people are not say anti-McCoy, but why he gets a bad rap. Because he's the supposed leader of the team, and the team has done zero for so long, which is not his fault. I mean, I'm just saying perception-wise, I think that's what it is. So the people that get upset and call him out, I get what they're saying. The people that defend him, I get what they're saying too. When it comes down to it, when you've watched this team for the past 10 years and nothing has happened, it feels like nothing matters, and that's because nothing has mattered. That's the saddest part. Not a single thing has truly actually mattered at all for almost a decade. I mean, really, that's where we're at as Bucks fans right now. And here we got ready again for a new season 2017, and all that was going to be different this year. That's what we were thinking. And that's what's so hard to accept right now. And again, they haven't lost anything yet. I mean, if anything is in the Bucks' favor right now, the NFC South and the NFC as a whole is just wide open. Nobody's that bad. I mean, hell, the Saints are in first place, and they were 0-2 and considered to be the only team in the South that didn't have a chance to win it just 3 weeks ago. We were like, I don't know, Atlanta's pretty good, but maybe the Bucks can beat them. And, oh, yeah, Carolina, you got to watch them too. Yeah, Saints, don't worry about them. But the other three teams, it really is anybody's game. And now that one team that we all blew off, they're the ones leading the division. And Atlanta looks very, very average. Carolina, I mean, that game against the Bears last weekend was a terrible loss. They were just embarrassed up there. And then you got us. So, who the hell knows? That's the best thing going in the Bucks' favor right now. And it's not just the NFC South, the whole NFC. I mean, the Eagles look great. You know, they're finding ways. Nobody in the NFC West is all that intimidating. Nobody in the NFC North is all that intimidating now that Rodgers is hurt. I mean, it's wide open. So the Bucks could go 8-8. I don't know. They could go 9-7. They could go 6-10. We don't know. But that's the biggest thing going in the Bucks' favor. But either way, all they can control now is what's in front of them. And you hope they figure out a way to beat a team. I mean, we've said this before, though. Oh, Arizona, bad team, should beat them. Okay, no, didn't happen. You know, thought they should have beaten Minnesota back then, didn't happen. The Bills, tough defense, but the offense rose to the occasion. Joe was posting last week about how bad the Bills were, rated as a blocking team, no receivers. Tyrod Taylor beat him with his legs mostly this past Sunday, but no reason the Bucs shouldn't have been able to stop them. They couldn't. So I'm alternately incredibly pessimistic about this Bucks team and optimistic looking at the rest of the teams in the NFC at the same time. And then Carolina this weekend. Like I said, terrible loss to Chicago. You've got Cam Newton, who consistently acts like the biggest douchebag in the NFL, non-criminal category. Doing it again this week, storming out of press conferences, dressing like he's going to be in a Bruno Mars video for every press conference. I mean, I don't like Cam Newton, okay? And I don't say that very often about players. We don't know these guys personally, but Cam Newton's an attention whore, and it's all great when he's, hey, look at me, we're doing well, check me out, and then it doesn't go well, and all of a sudden he's just petulant. If any of my buddies walked in to the room wearing the things Cam Newton wears to his press conferences. Like, imagine, like, you know, one of your buddies, you're going out for the night. Hey, we're going to go out later. Let's all meet at Steve's, and then we'll go out from there. What if one of your buddies, like, walked in wearing one of those get-ups? I mean, I think we'd all just beat him up. Now, Cam is probably a guy who could beat all of us up, even if we all fought him at one time. But the point is, he's still a douchebag. They're still bad. And this is a Bucks team playing at home. Look, you haven't played any division games yet. You could still go 5-1 in the division for all we know. Do that. See what happens. Even 4-2 in the division. You know, they've got opportunities in front of them. That's all I'm saying for now. But it's pointless to even speculate anymore about what they're going to do week to week because, like I said, every time I think, hey, this looks like a good spot for the Bucks, feel like they can bounce back here, it's been disappointing. And it starts with the defense. It starts with the defense. And everybody's going to talk about Adam Humphrey's fumble. I even saw people on Twitter after that fumble, and after everybody started, you know, oh, the sky's falling, we suck, we're terrible. And there's always the Pollyannas who, nothing's ever wrong. It's everything's okay, no big deal. And I try not to go that route either. They're like, you know what? What's the big deal? Adam Humphries, who's as reliable as they come, who never ever lets you down, who hasn't turned the ball over in 7,500 touches in the past 5 years, whatever. So he fumbled once. It happened. So what? What are you mad about? Well, we're not mad about Adam Humphries fumbling. We're mad about all the stuff before that. We're mad that we're 2-4. We're mad that we haven't been to the playoffs in 10 years. We're mad that we haven't won a playoff game in 15 years. We're mad that we led the game by 7 points and it took 5 milliseconds for that lead to get blown. Then we're mad that Adam Humphries fumbled and allowed the Bills to win the game. So yeah, don't act like, oh, so what? He fumbled. It happens. It's still a good Bucks team. The offense. No, stop being... Be positive. I'm positive. But don't be naive. We're not mad because of Adam. I love Adam Humphries. That's fine. He fumbled. We shouldn't be in a position where a fumble kills us with the game on the line like that. Because the Bucks took a touchdown lead with 2.5 minutes left or whatever it was. That should have been the game. Defense, go knock them down. Get us out of here. We're mad about everything. But now it's time to look ahead. Bucks-Panthers, Raymond James Stadium, Sunday at 1. Win and you're 3-4. They've been there before and done some things afterward. Lose and we'll come back here and rant some more next week. Anyway, thanks to Joe, as always, for hosting this podcast. Thanks to all of you for listening. I love hearing from you guys. So like I said, anytime you want to email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Hit me up on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. I really appreciate everything you guys have been doing. The Dunedin Pirates, my semi-pro football team, we're into week 2 of practice. We're putting helmets on next week. Ernest Givens, our head coach, former Oilers receiver, still leading receiver in franchise history for the Titans/Oilers, says, okay, we're going to go helmets this week, and then we're going to go helmets and shoulder pads the week after. We've been running. We've been doing drills. I've been getting beat routinely at free safety in practice until I learn all my assignments. It's been great. Come on out there and check us out. And the logo should be now up on the website, too. Just click on the Dunedin Pirates logo. You'll see it. Get more information that way. But again, thanks to the Joes. Thanks to all of you. That is the free stretch for Week 8 in the National Football League. Let's go, Bucks. And wherever you are, have a good afternoon, evening, and good night.